Hello and welcome to another edition of the Tree City Sports Podcast. I am your host, Andrew Baker, here as always with my co-host, Graham Moen.
How's it going, guys?
Today was going to be strictly a Cavs podcast. Cavs have made some trades at the deadline. They've got a mildly interesting team now that is still truly terrible. But
at least it's not completely boring now.
Right. We'll still talk about the Cavs. We definitely will. But first, the Browns have kind of hijacked today's news cycle because they signed Kareem Hunt. So for a brief background of Kareem Hunt was a Pro Bowl caliber running back for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's 23 years old, so he's still very, very early in his career. Mm-hmm. He's got speed. He's got enough power to matter. He's a good receiver.
Yeah, he's a really good receiver.
He's truly a feature back who is one of the, six to eight best running backs in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, it's no mistake that despite the fact that the Chiefs were still getting good production out of their running backs, that they missed him.
Yeah, they definitely missed him in the playoffs. He could have been the difference maker.
I mean, Damian Williams, the running back for the Chiefs, did a good job in his role, and I think to an extent, Andy Reid's system does help you as a running back because it does give you a lot of chances to succeed. But he's a really good running back, and on talent alone, he's someone that is just can change a game on a dime.
Yeah. Kareem Hunt, NFL running backs have been devalued the past, 5 to 10 years as the NFL becomes more and more.
He went in the third round, so.
Right. As the NFL becomes more and more of a passing and a system type of league. But clearly he still has a lot of value. He's one of the 6 to 8 best running backs in the NFL, no question. He's 23. So you may be wondering, if you don't already know about it, why is he not on a team right now? He's also a Cleveland native, I should note.
Yep, Willoughby South graduate.
He got cut by the Chiefs after video surfaced of a domestic abuse incident in which he...
In Cleveland,
at a hotel in Cleveland, in which he kicked a young woman, basically, outside of his hotel room.
Repeatedly.
Yeah, so...
So he was released as soon as that video came out.
And the thing is... He got released as soon as the video came out. So yeah. The NFL has learned nothing from the Ray Rice incident, which Ray Rice punched his wife in the face and never got on another NFL team again. The details of the Ray Rice case were public. Ray Rice had admitted and pleaded guilty to what he did, and yet the Ravens did nothing with Ray Rice until the video came out. So I was thinking, maybe it'll be different this time, but of course it's not. The Kareem Hunt incident was, again...
It was a year ago. It was a year... Yeah. When that video was released, that incident had happened a year prior.
And again, the Chiefs knew what happened.
Yeah.
And they didn't release him until the video came out, which just shows that NFL teams will continue to get away with it for as long as they can if a guy's a good player. Now, here's the thing. I think... There is a little bit to be said about the scenario in which Kareem Hunt, was in the situation he was in. But, so the Browns guaranteed him nothing.
Good.
He's getting paid very little this season if he does play. It remains to be seen how long he'll be suspended for. It'll be at least 4 games.
I think at least 6 for me personally. Yeah,
it would be probably half a year or more, maybe, depending on the NFL might want to set a standard or show that they actually do care about domestic violence.
Well, the NFL had increased the punishment for domestic violence policy, I believe, from 4 games to 6 games.
Minimum.
Yeah. So I think regardless, he will serve 6 games and it could be as much as a full year that he's out.
And if he does actually play for the Browns, which John Dorsey is saying there's a zero tolerance policy, meaning if anything happens again, he's gone. I think NFL teams talking about zero tolerance policy after they sign a guy who did something is kind of ironic. It's not zero tolerance if he's on your roster now. But if he does play for the Browns after this season, he'd be a restricted free agent, which means the Browns basically control his rights and his future.
For 2 years, they control Kareem Hunt.
So... Clearly, having a 23-year-old star running back on a very low salary and then controlled for the future, with also knowing that his incident will control his value and cause him to be probably underpaid for what he is as a player, looks great.
And the potential of pairing him with Nick Chubb, who had a sensational rookie year when he took over.
Right. I think That said, there are many issues with this, and I'm sure you have some issues, Graham, so I will go ahead and let you give your opinion first now that we've kind of have the facts out of the way,
yeah.
And I will give my opinion after that.
I was at work when the news broke. It was we're recording this podcast on Tuesday, February 12th, and it happened on the Monday, the 11th, that he was signed. And I was at work, I was driving, and I saw it, and I was like, wow, the Browns really just are – John Dorsey specifically is just really putting a lot of his eggs into this basket that he can draft these players or sign these players that have had issues in the past, and he's going to strike gold every time because he finds these talented guys that have fallen because of character concerns. And
he takes chances.
Some of them have worked. Tyreek Hill has worked out to this point, and his thing was egregious as well.
And most of those aren't even really taking chances. They're basically just saying, I don't care about someone's history. It's not really taking a chance on a guy that you know is talented. Because you're drafting – John Dorsey isn't drafting these guys not believing in the talent. He's basically saying, I'm drafting or signing these guys because I know they're talented, and I'm hoping they don't do anything bad in the future. So I get that technically the term taking a chance applies because there's always a chance they do something else. But basically what John Dorsey is doing is saying, I don't really care as much about off the field behavior. I'm not going to take a stand in that way. I'm going to assemble the best roster possible. And if you have an incident off the field, that's going to drive your value down low enough that I can get you at a discounted rate. He's going to take that almost every time. Is what it seems like he's saying.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, John Dorsey has a history of doing this, and
it works out on the field.
He has been successful to this point. He has not yet been burned by one of these picks. While he has been the GM of a team, which his first GM job was in Kansas City. He wasn't the GM in Green Bay. He was just a scout there. He was a head scout there. He came to the Chiefs. He drafted a lot of players. Tyreek Hill being one. Kareem Hunt he drafted. And he even said in his statement that he's known Kareem since 2016, and he knows him, and he talked to him when he got drafted. So he knows him. And people change sometimes, though, too. Or maybe he just didn't know the full story. So John Dorsey's really putting a big risk on his reputation and really the Browns' reputation because he has become the face of the Browns in a way. The Haslams have stepped back, and it's a great credit to Jimmy Haslam that he was finally able to step back for the most part and let John Dorsey run this because we believe in John Dorsey as a talent evaluator, being that key term. Mm-hmm. But it's starting to get to a point, and I still believe in him, but it's getting to a point now where taking these chances on these players it's eventually going to blow up in your face. Like you're not going to have 100% hit rate on these players that have had these issues in the past. And Josh Gordon had several chances, came here with the Browns, didn't get a second chance from John Dorsey. John Dorsey said, okay, we're done. See you later. So it's kind of weird in a way that he has this connection with Kareem Hunt specifically because he was in Kansas City and he drafted him. So he knows him a little bit better. But as Browns fans, it's a little bit concerning that he's starting to take more and more of these players because you can really only have a couple of those players, like a handful of those players on one team before it creates serious issues in the locker room. Because as a GM, you have to think every night when you are going to bed, you could get that phone call saying, oh, Kareem, you just got arrested again for driving under the influence, or he just got arrested for another domestic violence case, or Antonio Callaway got caught with pot in his car. That's eventually going to come back and bite you. And I think he's taking too many bites of the apple right now, thinking that he's going to strike gold and build a really good team. Because on talent, the talent portion of this signing is undebatable, and we've talked about that. Kareem Hunt's a very good running back. And if he is able to stay on the field and stay out of trouble, the Browns have a running back tandem that might only be rivaled by the New Orleans Saints with Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara. It's that talented. Because Nick Chubb already showed how talented he was, and Kareem Hunt has rushed for 1,300, 1,400 yards before. So that's not the problem. The problem is, how many more of these players are you going to sign, especially when it comes to domestic violence issues? How many more of these players are you going to sign before you start putting the reputation of the team at stake?
Do you think that you will feel uncomfortable rooting for Kareem Hunt or celebrating, you know, big plays or touchdowns that he makes?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I will. Like, And I think the big difference for Kareem Hunt specifically is a lot of these incidents happened when he was an adult and he has had that time to grow up and learn these things, and he didn't make the right decisions. And a player we're going to talk about later briefly, Jeffrey Simmons, had similar issues with domestic violence. He was in high school when it happened, and he's had multiple years of removed from the situation. And he, from all accounts, he's been a model citizen. With Kareem Hunt, he just got released in December of 2018, and he's getting signed now. So it's been 2 months, and he's already getting another chance in the NFL. And that's a little uneasy for me because I don't know how much he's changed. And that makes me nervous because how can I root for a guy to score touchdowns when all I know the next week he could be gone?
Yeah, I think I think a lot of people are outraged over the Kareem Hunt signing, and I understand it. I think there's a precedent that the NFL has set, and that precedent is, if you are an average or below average player or just a rotation piece, or you're older and past your prime, if you're a player that can't make a major impact in the field, they will talk all about, you know, we are building, you know, men of character. We're assembling men of character. And
building a culture.
We're building a culture, and we don't stand for domestic violence. We stand with the victims. We don't stand for, you know, drinking problems, whatever it may be. But that rings pretty hollow when you see guys like Kareem Hunt or even like Josh Gordon, which is a totally different argument because Josh Gordon isn't hurting anybody but himself. I will agree with that.
Yeah.
But it's similar in that if Josh Gordon was an average player, the Browns would have cut him with the first incident, like, and he never would have been signed by a team ever again. Instead, the Browns kept him for 3 years, and the Patriots traded for him. And guess what? It burned them again.
Yeah.
And you look at Ray Rice. Ray Rice was a great running back for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time that his domestic incident became public on video,
he had declined.
He had already declined. And he was like 27 or 28, which is very young in the grand scheme of life. But for an NFL running back, that's nearing the end.
Yeah.
Unless you're Frank Gore, who is ageless. Peterson.
But yeah, exactly.
And that's the precedent the NFL has set, is that if you're young enough, good enough, have potential, are at a position of need, can make an impact, we will look past whatever you did. And again, the Redskins this year trading for,
yeah, they had,
what's his name?
They had Foster.
Yeah. Reuben Foster, who's an impact player who had been, you know, domestic violence accusations. And again, he has not been convicted of anything yet, but there have been so many allegations that at a certain point you look at it as a pattern.
And
but
Alden Smith.
But again, same way. These guys are talented players, yeah, and they're young players. And the NFL, as a league and as individual teams, will look past your off-the-field transgressions every time as long as you're young and you're talented.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the problem I have with the Browns signing Kareem Hunt. I don't know. I think it's complicated to look at someone like Kareem Hunt, who is 23 years old or 22 years old when these incidents happened, and decide that he's a dirtbag, he's a bad person, he doesn't belong, you know, in the NFL, et cetera, et cetera. But I also do – it really is very obvious what the NFL cares about. And I think with Kareem Hunt, I don't know that Kareem Hunt's a bad person. I don't know Kareem Hunt. I don't know that he's a good person.
Yeah.
I know that as a person, I 1,000% believe that whatever issues he has had in his life, you know, there's a good chance that he'll never have them again because he will change who he is as a person. He'll work on himself. He'll work on his temper. He'll work on, you know, maybe alcohol-related issues, whatever it may be. And he very well may be a stand-up citizen the rest of his life.
I hope he realizes that.
And I'm hoping
this might be his last chance.
And I'm hoping he is a stand-up person the rest of his life. But I don't know whether guys that have domestic violence allegations or incidents should be allowed back in the league, because playing the league is a privilege. But the NFL is a league that does far more for its owners than its players in comparison to almost every other sport in the world. Mm-hmm. I think that has to be factored in. And I think at long last, I think with Kareem Hunt specifically, I think you have to look at the incident itself. I think if Kareem Hunt had one incident, the one we saw that was on video, yes, and he did kick a woman, yes, and that's, you know, disgraceful behavior, and it has no place in the world or in football or in anything. I think if that was just that one incident, I would be much more willing to look past it for this reason. And this is something that it bothers me that, you know, the national media, of course, is going wild with this story today. Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of discussions about Kareem Hunt have completely ignored the fact that the woman who he kicked was wildly drunk, was being disruptful, was, you know, he had repeatedly told her, please go away. I don't want to be around you right now. She was trying to force her way into his room. And the kicker here is that she called him the N-word with the hard R several mm-hmm. times. And I think the N-word, I think we all understand that that word is in an entirely different category of actions, if you call someone that word, than almost any other cuss word in our dictionary.
Yeah.
Because that word, the N-word, signifies so much in this country. Mm-hmm. And it's such a vile, disgraceful, just demeaning thing to call somebody. I'm not black, but if I was black and someone called me that word, I would want to kick them in the face. And I would want to punch them, and I would want to do all that. Because that's a line you don't cross in this country. And that is the ultimate, ultimate form of disrespect and provocation. And that does not excuse Kareem Hunt's behavior. He should have walked away. He should have called security. He should have just – what? There's a lot of different – there's a lot of things he could have done differently.
Yeah.
But in the moment, if you're called the N-word as a black man in America, I can't imagine the emotions you have.
Yeah.
And I think for that one incident, it does not make it okay. Absolutely not. It does not, you know, give – a legitimate reason for his behavior? Absolutely not. But I can understand in some degree why he did, you know, kick a woman. Because regardless of man or woman, when you use that N-word, you are deserving of a punishment. Again, I'm not saying that he should have kicked the woman. It's wrong. It's very, very wrong. And physical trauma is far above even calling someone the N-word, as vile as it is. Mm-hmm. I just think the biggest issue I have with this Kareem Hunt thing is, again, there have been other allegations, and we don't have those videos, but I can guarantee you, if we did have those videos, Kareem Hunt wouldn't be in the NFL right now.
No.
And that's the problem here. End of the day is the NFL covers its ass as long as it can. Mm-hmm. There's no video.
And then when the video comes
just,
out.
It's just an allegation. It was just one time. At a certain point, there has to be a line drawn here where we say certain behavior isn't acceptable if you're going to play in the NFL. But that's I just legitimately don't know.
When, I mean, it's in any workplace.
I just legitimately don't know when that would ever happen. That's what I'm saying.
It's in any workplace. If you get charged with domestic violence at a normal job, you're probably going to get fired. Or you're going to be suspended for a very long time.
And again, I believe in second chances. I believe in people changing.
I agree.
I believe that there should be space for someone like Kareem Hunt with his past to be a productive member of society. Just the Browns signed him a lot faster than anyone thought Kareem Hunt would get signed.
And this is the smallest.
You can also say, look, someone was going to sign Kareem Hunt. Why not the Browns? But you know, at a certain point, as an organization, you do have to stand for something, and the Browns aren't doing that. And again, The incident we saw on video, everyone in the entire incident was at fault. And, you know, I understand why Kareem Hunt was angry, but it also doesn't excuse his behavior in any way. And I guarantee you, if another video comes out, then he won't be on the Browns, and all of a sudden they'll say, oh, we couldn't tolerate this. But you could, but you actually. Could enough, you know what I mean?
Evidence came out, yeah.
And I also think about it, just, it's a very complicated situation with the video we saw. And it's, I don't know how to parse out what the punishment should be and whether or not guys like Kareem Hunt should be allowed to play football again. Mm-hmm. All I know is that I will be uncomfortable watching him. And also, the Browns didn't need a running back.
That was going to be my thing. Is that's a small thing here, but if he would have played at a position that the Browns needed, I don't understand
the risk for the Browns because you didn't need him.
Like, yeah, you freeze out Duke Johnson basically, and now and you saw John Dorsey's quote saying that he's not expendable yet, which is John Dorsey's not good at press conferences, and we've known this, but these type of sensitive topics, and then adding that as another thing on top of it when dealing with business. That's not great.
Well, and they asked John Dorsey about domestic violence, and he basically said, our owner has spoken on that. It's not my job. And it's like, dude, come on.
It is your job. You're the face of the organization now.
Yeah.
He's wanted that, and he got it. So now he has to be able to handle that.
The Kareem Hunt situation is a lot more complicated than most people will allow it to be on either side. Some people say, hey, he did it. Whatever. He got cut. He served his punishment for not playing for the Chiefs.
What's the punishment? 2 months?
Right. And that's the thing. It's more complicated than that. Some people will say Kareem Hunt should never be allowed to play football again. Well, it's more complicated than that too.
It's two extremes, and trying to find a spot in the middle is difficult because in the NFL, it's kind of a black and white league.
All I know is I hope Kareem Hunt can never have another incident like this again. Mm-hmm. I hope Kareem Hunt can be a great player and a great person. I also know that it makes me kind of uncomfortable the Browns signed him, especially this early and this soon after, you know, this whole thing kind of became public.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Is there anything else you want to say about it?
Not about Kareem Hunt, but I mean, if we're talking in the same vein, I mean, we just wanted to give you guys after Kareem Hunt, just a quick thing about the Browns before we talk about the Cavs. I talked about Jeffrey Simmons at one point as a prospect for the Browns, defensive tackle, three technique guy that could perfect come in fit. And play next to Larry Okunjobi. Everyone says something different.
Perfect fit. And many, you know, quote unquote insiders had linked the Browns to Simmons.
And like I said, he had character concerns as well. He had an incident where he was, the story was he was protecting his sister from a fight and he beat up a woman when he was in high school. But since he, and then this is what makes it difficult to parse between the two is that, since he's had that incident at age 17 to where he is now at age 21, he's had no incidents. He's had no prior other problems with any law enforcement. He's been a model citizen in Starksville at Mississippi State. He was an academic All-American at one point. So it seems like he's turned himself around, but we don't know that. And that's the problem with it. So the Browns could have had a chance at him because he was going to drop because of character concerns.
A lot of people thought the Browns were going to get him in the first round.
Yeah. And now that's not – now he reportedly tore his ACL. We don't know that yet. That hasn't been confirmed. But if that's true and he has a knee injury, he's not going in the first round.
Yeah.
There's no chance he's going in the first round.
Someone that could have been available for the Browns who would have been a perfect fit for everything they need and has been linked to them, has torn his ACL.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows where he goes in the draft now. I would suspect
– probably day two.
There's a chance he gets – the Browns could still get him the second round.
I mean, hey, Jalen Smith tore his knee up completely and went in the second round.
He was a top five pick.
Yeah, he was like a generational linebacker and tore his knee up and then still got drafted. And now is finally playing better. Yeah. ACL injuries are different, obviously. Yeah. Jalen Smith was potentially career ending, whereas ACL injuries now just seem like kind of standard. And he'll probably be back in 9 months.
If the Browns got Jeffrey Simmons in the second round now, I'd be pretty happy with it still.
They'd get him back in like November, probably. Yeah. So, I mean, they could get him back for some of the season. That's not really the point. But if he falls, and that's the other thing is we just talked about character stuff. Is John Dorsey going to be willing to take another chance if Kareem Hunt's still on the team and you take another guy with character concerns?
History tells us yes. We'll find out.
How many more swings is he going to have?
Yeah. History tells us yes, he will. And yes, the NFL will.
Yeah.
And that's the problem here. We'll be back to talk Cavs after this short break. And we are back to discuss your Cleveland Cavaliers, who are now not the worst team in the NBA.
Not the worst.
Not the second worst team in the NBA.
Not the, oh.
They're the third worst team in the NBA. Yay, let's go Cavs.
Put this all in right. All caps. The Cavs suck at tanking.
So.
They can't even do tanking right.
The Cavs have done some good things. At the trade deadline, they have already traded Hill. They've already traded Korver.
Yeah.
At the deadline, they flipped Rodney Hood for basically filler salary and a couple second-round picks.
Yep.
And they flipped Alec Burks for Marquise Chris, Brandon Knight, and the Rockets' first-round pick this year. What so
the four they were going to use to get Jimmy Butler.
Right. So to parse that out, basically getting two second-round picks for Rodney Hood, and they're legitimate seconds. They're not late seconds. They're legitimate second picks. Sometimes in the NBA, there's second-round picks traded that aren't actually picks. It's stupid. But
like,
anyways,
yeah,
getting two second-round picks for like 30 games of Rodney Hood is pretty good work for the Cavs, honestly.
Especially considering
they weren't going to get a first-round pick. They were holding out for that. But he, quite frankly, Rodney Hood is not very good as a starter. I think as a bench shooter for the Blazers, he could be pretty nice.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, him and like Evan Turner together.
Right. But ultimately, you know, I think 2 seconds is a good haul for Rodney Hood.
Yeah, and then the filler Alec for Burks won't do much.
Was acquired in the Kyle Korver deal basically just to get traded again.
Yeah.
And
he had some pretty good games with us.
Yeah, I mean, he was better than most of the players in the Cavs roster. He's at least a functional NBA role player.
He's a good scorer.
He's kind of a funky player. He rebounds and passes a little bit. He's kind of like slender. He's an interesting player.
He's like a poor man's Tyreek Evans.
Yeah, very poor man's, yeah. So Marquise Chris was a draft bust with the Suns, traded to the Rockets, and didn't really play for them at all. He's physically talented, can shoot and score a little bit, can rebound a little bit, but has been very poor as a decision maker and a defender.
Awesome.
He's paid like $4 or $5 million based off his draft position, which the Rockets certainly didn't want to pay him. But I think he's worth a look as a lottery ticket for the Cavs. He's still only 22.
You know, yeah, he came out early.
He's still got upside. I think he's a worthy addition for the stretch run to at least see what they can get out of him. Brandon Knight is...
How many teams did he play for now?
Yeah, he's been traded around. Basically, like Brandon Wright was a solid young player early in his career and then signed a deal that was way, way, way bigger than he was worth.
I don't remember and who signed
he's also been
deal.
Hurt.
Wasn't it Detroit?
Milwaukee?
I thought it was Detroit.
Phoenix?
No, those are you're just naming everywhere he played.
Yeah.
I think it was Detroit.
I don't know. He's been around.
He was before Reggie Jackson.
So basically Brandon Knight is kind of like Alec Burks was, except his contract expires next year. He's basically just salary. You know, he's getting paid something like $14 million, and
he's getting paid the same as Clarkson.
The Rockets were very glad to dump having to pay him $14 million next year, and that's why the Cavs got the Rockets' first round pick, which will probably be between 21 and 24.
Yeah, which we'll get.
So
this
basically
year.
The Cavs are paying $14 million for Brandon Knight next year to acquire the Rockets' first round pick this year, which is a little bit pricey, but for a team like the Cavs that doesn't care about money right now, I think it's a very smart trade. The Cavs were looking to trade Burks for money in a first round pick, and they got it. And this won't be a very bottom end of the first round pick. It's not a great draft this year by any stretch of the imagination, but a first round pick is a first round pick.
Maybe you can get a role player out of it.
Ultimately, the Cavs pretty much traded Kyle Korver and Rodney Hood and got 2 second round picks. No, what was it? 4 second round picks, a first round pick, and a look at Marquise Chris. That's pretty good. And guess what? That $14 million that Brandon Knight is owed next year is going to be an expiring contract next year, so they can do it all over again.
Yeah.
The Cavs are rebuilding the right way. Dan Gilbert is saying, I'll spend money to go get draft picks. And honestly, I like what the Cavs are doing.
Maybe next year they
can. It's not exciting. The Cavs aren't going to be good, but they're doing the right things.
Maybe next year they can squeeze a first-round pick out of Memphis or something and trade like Clarkson and Brandon Knight for Chandler Parsons and a first-round pick.
Sure. Run it up. I mean, why not?
2 expirings and you get a first round pick from a terrible team, I wouldn't mind.
The Cavs are a long, long way away from being a good NBA team. Like 3+ years.
I was going to say average, but
yeah.
Yeah, I'd say they might not be a good team they might not even be an average team, like 35 wins for like 2-3 years.
Yeah.
Max or minimum.
So, if you look at the Cavs roster now,
you know, the guards, they've got Sexton, who is going to play a lot, obviously, and he's showing slow signs of growth. I hope he makes a big jump next year because his growth in a lot of areas has been very minimal this year. They've got Delly, who is thriving as kind of a leader and a teacher. It's a perfect role for him. They've got Brandon Knight, who started last night and is probably better than most of the players in their roster. And you know,
can at least score.
You know, Brandon Knight could at least play well enough this year and early next year that whatever team trades for his contract would actually consider him a bottom of the rotation player. That would be a bonus for the Cavs. He won't be a long-term piece, but he's at least, you know, a high character guy and a guy that could up his value slightly in the next year or so.
Yeah.
They've got David Nwaba, who's been a bust this year.
Who started at small forward.
But I think Nwaba's mostly been a bust because he's never been right with a knee injury, but he's at least a somewhat interesting player. Jordan Clarkson's fun. They've got Nick Stauskas now, who is not good.
He's never been good.
Again, he's got, what, a 10% chance of being an NBA rotation player, maybe? Yeah. Maybe 20% or 30%.
I'd say closer to Ted, because
he's worth having for the minimum.
He's just never really been that successful anywhere he's been. He's already been in a lot of locations early in his career.
Rodney Hood, Alec Burks, George Hill, Kyle Korver, those guys were not going to be pieces going forward.
No, they were all built around LeBron.
Nick Stauskas, Marquise Chris. You know, if the Cavs can make one of those guys a legit role player, it'll be worth it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It'll be worth it. They've still got Jetty Osman, who is progressing as the season went along pretty decently.
Just no one behind him.
Kevin Love is back. He had 14 points and 9 rebounds in 15 minutes yesterday. He looked healthier than he's looked in a long time.
So maybe we'll finally get to see an all-star caliber player.
Yeah, and the Cavs have legitimate centers in Tristan Thompson and Larry Nance. What this means is the Cavs are still bad, but for those of us who go out of our way to watch, you know, many Cavs games, they are going to at least be more interesting.
Yeah.
They're going to be more interesting to watch on a night-to-night basis. And it's not going to make them a legitimately good team, which is what they need, because they need to keep tanking.
I mean, how many players do you realistically think in 3 years are going to be on this team? Maybe two? I would say maybe Nance and maybe Sexton.
And Jetty Osman.
And Jetty, so three.
And you know what? At this point, Delly should just be a lifetime Cavalier.
Yeah.
Right? Like, come on.
I mean, Love's going to be... I mean, Love might still be here just because we won't be able to, might not be able to trade his contract, but
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see if he plays well enough and can stay healthy for a long period of time and that maybe we can get someone to take him off our hands.
You were discussing that the Cavs are bad at tanking.
Yeah, how do you go from number one to number three?
The absolute basement or ceiling, whichever way you look at it, for the Cavs this year is to be the fourth worst team in the league. That's the absolute lowest it will go. The top three teams each have the same odds of having each of the top three picks.
Yeah. So and as the, long and, as you and, stay in the top
and,
three.
And the fourth team is like 1% less. What it means when you move down is there's a greater chance you fall lower. The upside of drafting first or even top three is pretty much the same 1 through 4. But if you're first, the lowest you can fall is 5, 2, 6, 3, 7, 4, 8.
And that would be a nightmare for the Cavs if they tanked and got the 7th pick of the draft.
Oh, God. That would just... This is not a great draft.
No.
And many drafts...
Last year was a good draft.
In many drafts, if you have a top three pick, you're hoping for a star. In this year's draft...
There's a top one.
There's a top one, and there's a few guys with potential. There's but ultimately, potential ultimately, if you don't get Zion Williamson, you're going to be disappointed.
There's a few... There's like two or three potential all-stars, and then Zion's potential superstar.
Yeah.
So... There's a chance. There's maybe 5 players in this draft, but again, there's always players that come out of the woodwork. Paul George got drafted late, and
if you Giannis evaluate talent well, late. You can get good players anywhere.
Yeah, I'd say some players in the mid first round will happen, but from a just looking at it from a far away lens, yeah, it's really Zion and then everybody else.
Yeah,
see, even the two Duke guys have fallen pretty drastically far behind.
It kind of sucks to watch everyone in the NBA rooting for Zion to not go to the Cavs just because they don't want the Cavs to be relevant again. Everyone's like, oh, they've already won the lottery enough times. LeBron and Kyrie and a great player, Anthony Bennett. And
I think it's just Cleveland fatigue because of LeBron being there for as many years as he was. The Cleveland was kind of the center of attention for a lot of teams. Right.
And if Zion goes to the Knicks could have Anthony Davis and Kyrie next year.
And then the Knicks could be finally relevant again.
Right. I understand it, but hey.
I don't want him on
Phoenix. If Zion ends up in the Cavs, that'd be pretty freaking awesome, wouldn't it?
I would watch games just to watch him.
There's about a 15% chance that the Cavs win the lottery, regardless of where they're at.
Yeah, if they win the lottery, then obviously they really don't have to bring anyone else in. They know who they're going to draft. But if they don't win the lottery, then that's when it becomes more of a guessing game. And like Andrew said, can Kobe Altman in the front office really evaluate the talent that's available in this draft?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? I mean, Kobe Altman's doing a very good job of accumulating assets right now. The Cavs have really restocked their draft capital in the past couple months here. They've done a very good job. Truly, they have. We hate on the Cavs a lot right now because of where they're at, but you have to give them credit for, you know, understanding the situation they're in and being willing to make moves that, you know, cost money and hurt the current team, which, you know, whatever.
I mean, but ultimately, team's gonna suck, so who cares?
Exactly. Yeah. That's the point. Is ultimately they're getting the draft capital they need to begin this rebuild. Because let's be honest, this year the rebuild isn't really beginning. They came into the year hoping to make the playoffs.
I literally just think of that meme of the guy laughing as he sits in the car when people said the Cavs would make the playoffs.
Yeah. You're talking about the meme of 50 Cent laughing then rolling off. Yeah.
No, like getting in the car and just it's a guy in like the South. He's just like just gets into his car.
The Cavs had no chance of making the playoffs. But the rebuild has started with Colin Sexton, which has, you know, been rocky, but most rookie guards are not very good, truthfully.
They usually have they're kind of like the quarterbacks of the NFL or of NBA, where they have like the most to learn.
Yeah.
Most rookie point guards do not succeed at a high level. It's very few and far in between.
Yeah, there's a lot of alarming metrics with Sexton. I mean, he doesn't really pass ever. I think
he's a two guard that's not big enough to be
point you're looking at Colin Sexton as a Jordan Clarkson type scorer off the bench with more upside than that.
He could be your fourth starter on a good team.
Yeah.
I think if you have three good players and he could be the fourth guy and you have like a playmaking wings, which become more popular, I think he fits the NBA right now. But the problem is, I don't know how much more talent. I don't know if he's going to be talented enough to be one of those top guys.
I think if he can add enough strength that he doesn't just get bowled out of the way on defense.
And he needs to gain like 15 pounds.
And just get wrecked around the basket on offense. But look, so the point you were trying to make is Kobe Altman is doing a great job acquiring assets.
He's doing a very good job at that part.
And you have to give him credit. But
we don't know how
it's a complete unknown. How good are the Cavs at talent evaluation? Because Kobe Altman's been the GM for 3 years now, somewhere 2 or 3 years.
Two, because Griffin got fired in the year that Kyrie got traded.
So Kobe Altman has made one meaningful draft pick, and that was Colin Sexton. And Sexton was pretty much considered to be the likely pick there. He didn't go out of the way to pick Colin Sexton.
It's like we said, in a draft that had seven good players, the Cavs picked eighth.
Right.
So,
but hey, look, ultimately, the Cavs are doing a good job of accumulating assets. The question will be, can Kobe Altman and the Cavs front office pick the right players? That's the question with any team. The Cavs are going to have chances.
And can Dan Gilbert stay out of the fucking way?
Yeah, if Dan Gilbert would just shut up and be an owner instead of trying to influence the front office, that would be great.
You should talk to Jimmy Haslam.
I don't know how much he's influencing the front office, but I pray to God it's not very much.
You should talk to Jimmy Haslam. Because look what happens when Jimmy Haslam stays out of the way.
I mean, look, ultimately the Cavs are more interesting today than they were a week ago, because what are your goals for the rest of the season? You're going to continue to develop Sexton.
Develop young players.
You're going to continue to let Delly teach everybody.
Don't overwork.
You're going to hope that Marquise Chris or Brandon Knight can become a legit player, especially Chris. Let's say Chris or Nick Stauskas. You're hoping that Knight can play enough that his value rises a little bit. You're hoping that Love can have a healthy season to showcase him for a trade.
Any of your veterans, you want them to play well so that way they can up their value.
Yep.
And for Love, it's really not even playing well. It's just, can he stay healthy?
Yeah. I mean,
everyone knows Love's good.
Look, anything is more interesting than watching Rodney Hood chuck up deep twos, right? Let's be honest.
Hey, we have Colin Sexton for that.
We sure do. We'll be back with more Cavs eventually. Yeah. There's nothing pressing with the Cavs, you know. We'll talk about the Cavs before the season's up, especially we'll kind of assess how these new guys are looking at some point and assess maybe, like we said, maybe Marquise Chris can be a real NBA player.
So maybe he'll surprise us in the next couple of weeks.
We'll definitely be back to talk more Browns soon.
To the Combine's in 3 weeks.
Yep, we're 3 weeks away from the Combine. We're about 2 months away from the draft.
Free agency starts,
about what, 6 weeks?
Yeah, like 4 to 6 weeks.
Yep.
It happens like in the early March.
Yep.
So that'll be a crazy time for the Browns because Browns have like $80 million in cap space.
Graham and Olam will be back with more Champions League coverage.
Yeah, Champions League and a little bit of Premier League, but in about 10 days, The next fixtures are, there's fixtures happening today, Tuesday, February 12th. There's some happening tomorrow. And then next week, there is going to be more fixtures happening.
Yes, I love fixtures. Those great matches on the pitch.
And the legs, over two legs.
Over two legs played in football.
Yeah.
Soccer's a great sport. It's just funny to make fun of terms that aren't ours because we're America and we do everything different.
Yeah. I mean, look out for red and blue because Olam's team, Manchester United, is playing today. They actually lost. We can actually say that they lost. But
and Olam's mad, which always makes us happy.
It's just funny. But at the same time, we'll have more coverage there. We'll talk more about that. Make sure you check out our Twitter handles. For Andrew, it's at @abaker_sports. For me, it's at @gtmohan. Check out me on NFLFanBlitz.com. I'm a Cleveland Browns writer there, and I wrote an article titled Five Offseason Keys for the Cleveland Browns. If you could check that out, that would be awesome.
Was signing Kareem Hunt one of those keys?
No. We do have another article up there from one of our other contributors, and I am doing an article about five players that the Browns could target in the first round of the draft. Jeffrey Simmons will no longer be on there. He was before. I now have to get rid of him and put a new player in.
Pick him in the second round, Dorsey. Anything else, Graham?
No, I think that's it. Just stay track with us, and thank you for listening to the Tree City Sports Podcast.
Tree City Sports. What do you think? You like it?
I like it.
All right. Talk to you guys later.
Peace.